Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, November 19th, 2007, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, Dr. Dick. That's me. Hey, we're celebrating Thanksgiving this week here in the good old US of A. So I thought it'd be a great time to take a moment and thank all of you for making DrDickSexAdvice.com such a great success. I'm so delighted to be able to bring you these podcasts, and I hope you enjoy listening to them as much as I enjoy preparing them. I want to extend a special thanks to all my correspondents, both those of you who call in and those of you who write. I'm indebted to you for sharing your concerns with me and the rest of my audience. Together, we are making a profound difference by bringing healthy, affirmative, sex-positive information to people all around the world. Today's podcast is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find a link to this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, fetish wear, and gear right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. Shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom is just so damn fun and easy. Yes-siree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those marital aids you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts and leering salesmen in unsavory neighborhoods because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. Sex toys and props are just a click away. I have a really delectable show for you today, but before we begin, I'd like to remind you of the Lickety Split Sex Advice Podcast voicemail hotline at 866-422-5680. This is a no-pressure, voicemail kind of setup. No human will be answering your call, least of all me. So don't be shy, my pretties. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Okay, on with the show.
How you doing, Dr. Dick? My name's Chris. I'm 29 years old, and I've been married for the last 3 years. I was seeing my wife for 5 years prior to being married, so I guess it's a total of 8 that we've been together. When we first got together, everything was great. The sex was outstanding. 69, all types of positions, tons of oral, tons of foreplay, her orgasming every time. It seems as if in the last couple of years, everything has dwindled away to the point where it's now just her on top for a little bit, me on top for a little bit until I finish, and then we go back into the living room and hang out. And whenever I bring up the subject, she gets very uncomfortable and won't talk about it. She refuses to talk about it. And it's really starting to freak me out in every aspect of our relationship at this point. And I love the girl, so I don't want to go anywhere. I'm wondering if there's any hope. If there's any hope to get it back to where it was, that fresh hotness and spontaneity almost. And, you know, how can I bring the heat back?
Like I always say, if I had a nickel for every time I've heard this same complaint from frustrated and desperate men or women trapped in undersexed or no-sex marriages, I'd have enough money to lay down my keyboard, give up my status as the most fabulous and revered sexpert in the universe, and retire to Maui. Despite the frequency of the grievance, it still breaks my heart to hear the despair. I mean, it's one thing to have the sexual connection between partners drift away by mutual consent. It's another thing altogether to have one partner dissolve the sexual connection unilaterally while leaving the other partner bewildered and disoriented. And what gives with a partner who refuses to talk about why the sex has taken a nosedive? That's just so wrong. I can understand not knowing exactly what to say about things as they go south, or even how to say what might be on your mind, but to clam up altogether, that's just unfair. Suppose the problem had to do with finances instead of sex. What if one or the other of you decided to start splurging on major purchases without consulting the other? There'd be hell to pay then, I'd guess. There'd be no ducking out of the responsibility by clamming up in this instance. But when it comes to sex, somehow the same rules for accountability don't always apply. Why is that? Sexuality is both a personal expression and a means of bonding with another person. Thus, sexual well-being in a relationship is way more than just the old in and out. It's a means of taking responsibility for one's eroticism as an integral part of a relationship. Sex is a way of expressing ourselves, as well as our love for the other. The confusion, unhappiness, and anxiety that results from the breakdown of this fundamental tenet will, as you suggest, Chris, spill over into and contaminate other areas of the relationship. And this doesn't need to happen. When I encountered this predicament in my counseling practice, I always build in some individual time with each partner, even though the couple is there for couples counseling. I often get a much better sense of what's causing the breakdown in these private sessions than I do when the couple and I work together as a threesome. Sometimes it's easier for the individual to talk to me privately than to be open, honest, and forthcoming about his or her feelings with his or her partner sitting right there. My experience tells me that more often than not, a refusal to discuss sexual concerns has more to do with not knowing how to express oneself without hurting the feelings of the other. Sometimes an individual simply doesn't know herself why things are different than they once were. Sometimes there are lifestyle issues at play, family concerns, work concerns, lack of sleep, drug or alcohol consumption, etc. Sometimes there are medical and psychological issues that impact on a person's libido. Weight gain, birth control, other pharmaceutical drugs, diabetes, and depression, to mention a few. There's also something we in the business call desire discrepancy disorder, which is just a fancy schmancy way of saying one partner has a stronger libido than the other. But often, the simplest and most ordinary explanation is that the partnered sex has become stale, rote, and boring. Whatever the causes of the imbalance, it needs to be addressed as a couple. Once the couple has identified the problem, the next step is learning how to talk about it in an effective yet non-threatening sort of way. This can be tricky, to say the least, but it's still so much easier than trying to avoid the issue altogether. Okay, so your wife is reluctant to discuss the matter with you, Chris. That just means that you're going to have to be proactive in bringing this issue to a head, and I'm not suggesting that you browbeat your wife about her unwillingness to talk to you about the issue. It's going to be all about you leading by example. Here's what I suggest. Set up a time for you and your wife to have a sit-down. This needs to be scheduled in advance so that both of you know it's coming. There ought to be no surprises. This conference should not immediately follow sex, especially disappointing sex. Set aside at least 30 minutes when you guys are fresh and relaxed, and then start preparing what you want to say. Take notes if necessary. When the time comes for the big sit-down, I encourage you to use I statements instead of you statements. Begin by laying out how you feel and owning your feelings. I feel confused. I feel frustrated. I feel that our relationship is in jeopardy. Stay away from statements like, "You make me feel blah blah blah." These kind of pronouncements will only muddy the waters. Then, I suggest that you invite your wife to do the same. If she can't or won't, move on to what steps you will take to get to the bottom of this. Something like, I don't want to continue the status quo. I've decided that I'm going to seek some professional help with this. Maybe there's something I'm missing. I can't get to the bottom of this on my own. So maybe a sex therapist will help me understand what's going on. Again, invite her to join you in this effort. If she refuses or stalls out, move on to closing the discussion. You might say something like, "Thank you for hearing me out on this. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I think our relationship is worth the effort to preserve it. And I'm actually going to do something to make sure that we stay together. My invitation to you to join me in this effort will remain open." Then end the discussion. Of course, if you take this route, you will have to follow through on your commitment. If you don't, you sabotage the whole damn thing, which will only make matters considerably worse. I encourage you to find a sex-positive therapist to work with. A good resource for this is the American College of Sexologists. You can visit their directory page on their website, americancollegeofsexologists.org. You will find listings for certified sexologists and sex therapists all over the world. If there is no one near you, contact the person closest to you and ask for a referral. Often my fellow ACS therapists and sexologists are very well connected to the broader sex-positive communities in their area. Whatever you do, don't settle for the path of the least resistance. Your leadership might be just the thing your wife is looking for to muster her own strength to face the facts. Either way, the problem you are facing will not go away simply by ignoring it. Disappointments will become resentments, and resentments inevitably will lead to acting out. And that will surely fuck things up royally. Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Don't be shy. Let it fly. Next, we hear from Teresa. She's a female, obviously, age 30, from Galveston. She writes, "My husband and I are thinking about maybe trying a threesome. It's been a big part of our fantasy life together for several years. We enjoy imagining ourselves with other people when we are making love to each other. We probably would have acted on this before, but we know that having a fantasy is not as risky as trying the actual thing. What are your thoughts?" My thoughts? Well, going on the number of threesomes and group sex questions I'm getting from straight folks lately, I'd have to say that y'all are finally discovering what most gay folks have known for a very long time. Three-way and group sex can be way fun and a potent tonic for a flagging partnered sex life. Threesomes and group sex are not all that tricky, especially when both partners in the primary relationship are up for the experimentation. And you guys sound like you've been priming the pump, so to speak, for some time now. Yeah, it's true, these things can blow up in your face, but that risk exists in just about everything that we do. And I am of the mind that nothing ventured is nothing gained. But I also suggest that you guys come up with a strategy on how to minimize the chances of being disappointed. I'd begin by dialing down expectations. If three-way sex has been part of your marital fantasy life for a while, I'd be willing to guess that these fantasy encounters are always fun and always successful, because they're products of your imagination. If you go into a real three-way with those kinds of expectations, you could be disappointed. Reality doesn't always live up to fantasy. The actual thing, as you suggest in your message to me, may not be so fantastic. But you'll never know without trying. I always think it's better to have lower expectations and be pleasantly surprised when they are exceeded than to be disappointed when higher expectations aren't met. You guys need to decide on some ground rules well in advance of the possible encounter. Among the things you ought to consider are, what will you look for in the additional partner? Will it be another woman? Another man? Does it matter? Who gets to choose the other partner? Do either or both of you get a veto of prospective playmates? Will the choice be spontaneous, or will you leave nothing to chance? Will you interview for the position, or just put yourselves in harm's way, so to speak, and go with the flow? Where will you look for these prospective partners? Will you search online? Where will the event take place? At your place, or somewhere neutral like a hotel? In terms of the sex itself, are there things that will be off bounds? The more you know about these things, the smoother the encounter will go. Gay guys have it easier when it comes to three ways in group sex. First, they tend to have defined roles like being primarily a top or primarily a bottom. They are also going to be playing with other men, gay or bi men. Things are not so easy for ostensibly straight folks because including a third person will mean adding someone of the same sex as one of the partners. So straight folks have to ask themselves, what will be the configuration of the play? Will it just be straight sex, all play directed towards someone of the other sex, or will it include play directed towards someone of the same sex? A lot of straight guys really get off on the idea of watching two chicks get it on, but would never contemplate mixing it up with another dude. So you see where you have to be careful in choosing your playmate. If he or she has a different understanding of the group encounter, there will be problems. That's why I always suggest that before the encounter actually happens, it's good for you to tell your prospective partners what your boundaries and expectations are. So you would also be wise to discover what turns your prospective playmates on. Investing in this discovery process will save possible embarrassments later. Once the three-way encounter begins, there's an etiquette y'all ought to adhere to. First and foremost is, don't leave anyone out. If you sense there's an inequity in the amount of play one partner is getting as opposed to another, then that's a recipe for disaster. If someone seems to be losing interest during the sex play, pay that person a little bit more attention. Of course, you guys might want to just set up a three-way so that one of you can watch the other play with someone else. You know, a kind of cheering on from the sidelines, as it were. While this may not necessarily be technically a three-way, as most people understand it, this kind of thing is very common. If your interest goes beyond the common ménage à trois to, let's say, a foursome or possibly a group, much of the same considerations as in a three-way apply. But since you're going to be dealing with even more bodies and personalities and sexual proclivities, the more caution is advised. And unless you're a swinger or can tap into your local swing set, these situations may be hard to find. Good luck! Hey, Dr. Dick. What is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number you keep talking about? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Again, 866-422-5680. Next, we hear from Ulrich. He's a male, 22, from Hanover, Germany. He writes, how do I know my girlfriend isn't faking it? She looks like she's into it, but sometimes it looks like too much drama. Too much drama. I love it. I'm going to assume that you're talking about what appears to be her throes of pleasure, you know, the screaming and moaning and thrashing about, just like in the porno movies. I'm not sure I know why women fake it. Men sure as hell don't go out of their way to put on a show if their heart or dick ain't in it. But women often do. And sometimes even us benighted men think something's fishy, so to speak. Maybe the question you're asking, Uli, might stem from the concern that you have about your own skill as a lover. I suppose the most obvious reason for a woman wanting to fake an orgasm is to massage the ego of the guy who's putting it to her. I suppose it's the path of the least resistance, after all. It's easier to fake it than to be honest with her lover about his prowess. Of course, there's always the possibility that the woman in question is pre-orgasmic. That is, that she's never had an orgasm, so she might think that this is how it's done. How sad is that? We all know that there's very little mystery about a dude's pleasure. He gets it up, he gets it on, and he gets it off. Pretty cut and dried. And there's often the evidence of his pleasure in the form of a pool of his own jizz. Although I hasten to add that an ejaculation is not the same thing as an orgasm, but it's rare to have an ejaculation that isn't somewhat pleasurable. A chick, on the other hand, is very different, don't you know? Her sexual organs and arousal are mostly internal. So, unless she's a squirter, you know, a G-spot ejaculation, there's only circumstantial evidence that she is being pleasured. I guess that's why so many women make all that drama. It's to compensate for not having anything as obvious as a hard-on and a puddle of spooge. Of course, the drama could also be a way of throwing us boys off the scent, so to speak. However, there are things you can look for that may indicate your partner is enjoying herself. Knowing something about the female sexual response cycle will, no doubt, be very helpful here. If you don't know your way around this phenomenon, I'd suggest that you have some remedial study to do. Again, the male sexual response cycle is pretty obvious. He gets wood. For a woman, the analogous response is she gets wet. If your lady has a wet pussy, you may be on the right track. Of course, lots of women don't lubricate all that much, so you might not want to rely on this evidence alone. In this instance, you might look for the secondary signs of arousal. These are pretty much the same in both women and men. Our pupils may dilate. Our skin may flush. Our nipples may erect. Our breathing may increase to a pant. Our heart rate will definitely increase, and our toes might curl. Not all of these will happen to everyone every single time, but you get my drift, right? In terms of the big O, men and women differ in many respects, but there are some commonalities. Both women and men have mini orgasms, as well as the major screamin' memes. Us menfolk tend not to pay too much attention to the little tremors because we know the big one is coming. Women, on the other hand, have less certainty that the big O will show up, so they tend to be more aware of the mini ones. Regardless of the gender, a good portion of the orgasm's physiologic response is the same in all of us. Muscle contractions, specifically the PC or pubococcygeus muscle, in both women and men, and vaginal and uterine muscles in women signal orgasm. Everything else, the writhing, the shuddering, the fluttering of the eyes, the moans of delight, is gravy. If the chick you're bumping has a wild orgasm every single time, I think she's faking it. If she comes, no matter what you're doing to her, I think she's faking it. If she sounds like a cheap porno flick, I think she's faking it. If she's still doing the, oh baby, you're the best, make mama scream, long after you stop doing whatever you were doing, I think she's faking it. If she's carrying on, yet looking over her shoulder at the television or the clock, then I think she's faking it. If there is no afterglow after the big O, I'll bet she's faking it. If you think you're with a faker, you might just want to tell her that she doesn't need to put on a show for you. On the contrary, you both would be much better served with a little honesty. Ask her for some feedback. What's working? What's not? Oh, and if you think the chick you're with is going to come as fast as you, you don't know your way around a pussy. And here's another thing you ought to know. Most women don't come from fucking alone. So if you think you've got a magic wand in your pants, you are sadly mistaken. If you're not using your hands and mouth, as well as your willy, she'll be likely to fake it. And finally, if you can't locate her clit to save your life, you can count on her faking it. Good luck. Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Don't be shy. Let it fly. Okay, I think we have time for one more. Manny, 40, from Michigan, he writes, what do you know about herbal Viagra? I see it advertised online a lot. Is it a safe alternative to this expensive drug like the ads claim? Here's the thing about most stuff, like herbal Viagra, that you see advertised online. It's crap. And some of it is dangerous crap. Particularly for the millions of men who take nitrates, the drugs prescribed to lower blood pressure and regulate heart disease. Popping one of these puppies could lead to a stroke or end your life. Despite the claims that these herbal alternatives are all natural, they often actually contain unregulated versions of the very pharmaceuticals that they are supposed to replace, like Viagra. Most of these products are manufactured overseas. Not that that's a bad thing in and of itself, but in light of recent contamination scares and subsequent recalls of everything from seafood and toys to dog food and toothpaste coming out of China and elsewhere, I wouldn't trust flushing this stuff down the toilet for fear the toilet would get sick. Here's a startling statistic. Sales of natural sexual enhancers are booming. Last year alone, sales topped $40 million. And when that kind of money is floating around, you can know for certain that more and more unscrupulous people are trying to cash in by flooding the market with dangerous knockoffs. Some producers of these herbal products actually warn users with heart and blood pressure problems to avoid taking their concoctions within 6 hours of taking their prescribed meds. Most doctors suggest 24 hours is much safer, but that kind of interval would compromise the effectiveness of the prescribed medications. And if I had to choose between regulating my heart and a stiffy, I would choose the former. This stuff isn't for younger men, or men without cardiac and circulatory disease either. There's enough evidence coming from hospital emergency rooms that link herbal sex pills with blurred vision, spontaneous nosebleeds, and severe headaches. And this is just the tip of the proverbial iceberg. Many men who experience the dangerous side effects of these herbal alternatives are way too embarrassed to seek the treatment they should have received. Internet sales for this kind of stuff is the most dubious. Slick online marketing and sophisticated official-looking websites often mask fraudulent and illegal operations. You know, under U.S. law, these herbal alternatives are considered dietary supplements, making them far less regulated than pharmaceuticals. In fact, they rarely face any barriers at all to market. Herbal alternatives often contain exact copies of patented drugs. But some manufacturers tweak the molecules to keep the effect of the original pharmaceutical while avoiding the scrutiny of the FDA and outside testing labs. My advice? Stay away from this stuff. If you have erectile dysfunction, see your physician. Stick with a known and tested pharmaceutical solution. Because if there are problems and you find yourself in an emergency room, at least you'll be able to tell the attending physician what product you consumed. And they will know how to deal with it. You will not have that kind of assurance if you poison yourself with an unknown product made up of uncertain ingredients. Good luck. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys, if your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't? I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really fun for yourself and all the pervs in your life. We have a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Not to worry. Take a look at my monthly ever-so-popular sex toy awareness feature right there on drdicksexadvice.com. It's chock-full of swell gift-giving ideas. You'll find a link to Dr. Dick's Stockroom right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads My Stockroom. And don't forget to look for Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex is even better. Over and out.